Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's JAS call on Tuesday, the 26th of July. We have Rafik Damak, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Tijani Benjema, Sintra Suknanan, John Rahman Khan, Boudouin Chombe, Carlton Samuels, Eric Brunner Williams, Dev Anand, Tiluk Singh, Aubrey Doria, Olivier Cresson Leblanc, Krista Papak, Alan Greenberg, Sébastien Bachelet, Andrew Mack, Elaine Fries. From staff, we have Carla Valente, Seth Green, Wendy Prophet, Glenda Saint-Giry and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies today noted from Michaeli Nalon, Evan Leibovich, Carlos Aguirre, and Alain Béranger. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking, it's for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Carlton.
Thank you, Gisela. Good day, everybody. Welcome to this JAS call. It's really great to see the crowd we have today. We are almost in the end zone here, and we are trying to make sure that we have a few items as tight as possible. If you look to the bottom left-hand corner for those in the Adobe room, you will see a mock-up of the issues we want to tackle today. Just to let you know, we are going to continue trying to fill out all of the information we possibly can on methods and parameters and terms for in-kind services. We're going to do everything we can to find as much information as we can on funding models, funds, and process aspects. You know our leads in these areas, Elaine and Avery, respectively. For those who haven't yet done so, may I remind you, if you have outstanding SOIs, you could update them and pass them to the staff as usual. Avery has a situation that she has to leave on the half hour. So although Elaine is listed as first in this text, might I ask Avery to lead off by talking about any updates she might have in the area?
Okay, yeah, this is Avery, and I apologize. I'm calling on Skype, so if the quality is poor, that's the reason. I've got no other way to call. No change has been made to any of the text. I haven't received any comments on any of the text, and I don't think I added any of the text other than there was one place where I think it was Elaine pointed out last time that on, I think it was panel selection and gaming, I had repetitive text. And so I fixed that and cleaned up that text a little. Other than that, no changes since Friday.
Okay. Thank you, Avery. Any one of us have any questions for Avery? By the way, for those of you who are on Adobe Connect, the text that we are talking about is on the, I put it in the Skype, in the Adobe Connect chat window. It's on the wiki on the candidate text, and it would be useful for you to refer to this text. This is what we have consolidated so far for any kind of comment. I see Tijani on board. Tijani, you have the floor, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Carlton. I read your text, Avery, and I find it well. The composition of the panel is, I think, it's the best way to run something which is more or less not gameable. But what I was waiting is a way to avoid gaming. This is the point. The composition of the panel will contribute to that, but is that any, if you want, I don't know, any way to work so that we will not be gamed?
Is that a question to me or to the group in general? To me, I think this is ICANN, so there's absolutely no way to prevent an attempt at gaming. I mean, ICANN is probably the world's center. Someone's got me
yelling.
Is probably the world's hub of professional gamers. So the attempts are going to be made. That's why I made the recommendation that I did. I think we need to have a set of criteria, and I think what Alan offered, sort of discussion of what's strong criteria, what's weak, is something that motivates the panel. But you have to count on the skills of that panel to take those recommendations and make sure that they're applied to prevent gaming. And still, somebody will get through. This is ICANN. Someone will game. And therefore, we probably also need some notion of penalty for gaming when you do get through and do get caught. But that's about the only thing I can think of. If, as various people have argued, if we make the conditions too tight, that just gives somebody a recipe to follow to game. If we make them too loose, then almost anybody can game. You don't have to be that clever. So what we're looking for is the Goldilocks point, where it's as tight as we can make it without being too tight, and we have a panel that understands the issues and understands, recognizes a gamer when they see one. And we know that ICANN has some people where they say, what would so-and-so do if this was the rule? And we need that so-and-so, and I don't want to quote names on this, but we need that so-and-so, or maybe two of those so-and-sos on this panel. Thank you for whoever stopped the echo. Nope, it's still there.
Thank you, Avery. Alan, you are on the board, and Andrew. Alan, you're next, sir.
Thank you very much. It's Alan Greenberg. I think Avery captured most of the message I was trying to put out in the little thing I did last night.
Yes.
We cannot come up with concrete hard rules, and I'm not sure we want to, because we need judgment to be involved here. Otherwise, gaming becomes a recipe issue, and we don't want that. I think we need to recommend to ICANN whether we want the errors to be on the side of generosity or anti-gaming, because I don't think you can do one. I don't think you can go strictly down the middle. Yes, we want a judgment call, but where do we want to err? To make sure that we never miss anyone who's truly needy, or make sure that there's absolutely no gaming? And I think that's a call that we should be making. I'm not quite sure I know where the right answer is, but I think it's a call we should be making. It's also why I stress the need that the judgment has to be done outside of ICANN. It's not only a matter of skills, although the skills are exceedingly important. It's a matter of not being in the political center where pressures can be applied through the various sources within ICANN, both staff and board members and others. So I think that isolation is very important in having a panel which can make a decision based on what they see as the facts and not as subject to pressures as it might be if it was closer into the center of ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. You're next, Andrew. You are on the board, sir.
Thank you very much, Carlton. Andrew Mack. I guess I have a couple of questions. I think what's been said so far, by and large, makes sense. For Avery, I am wondering who makes up the group of volunteers and whether it makes sense, I think it might, to try to prescribe that different parts of the community are represented, thus giving us both an outcome that is probably more representative, but also, avoid some of the politics. And to Alan's piece of it, I hear what you're saying about trying to make it outside of the stream of the politics. I'm just wondering who would do that? Would it have no connection to ICANN at all? Would it be? Would it be? How would that work in point of fact? I'm a little bit concerned if we're asking volunteers to do something over a long period of time, that in the same way that we've had, challenges with just volunteer fatigue. I think that might be an issue, and so I'm wondering whether we can think that through in advance. Thank you.
I have some answers, but I'll wait until after Tijani.
Yes. Thank you, Avery. Tijani is next, and then Avery after Tijani. Tijani, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Carlton. I do prefer the panel composition that Avery described it than out of ICANN as Alan proposed. We need to make it out of the political circle of ICANN, but it is much better that the community will compose this panel with the help of the specialists, of the experts. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Avery, you're next.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to say, basically, in response to Alan and Andrew. I'm recommending that, I always recommend, if I can, existing text or an existing process that already exists. So with the review teams that we've put together for Who Is, for accountability and transparency and whatever, ICANN has developed a practice now of a way to build a cross-community team. So my recommendation is that we build such a team. Now, exactly who does the final choosing? Is it, I don't think I'd say it's the GAC chair and the board president. I'm not sure how we'll figure that piece out. But, perhaps that does work. I don't know. But I recommend using that kind of mechanism where there is a representative on this panel from each of the ICANN communities. To Alan's point, I think there need to be a bunch of outside experts on this, an expert in donor community politics, an expert in the economics of the comparative economics of developing areas, what have you. I mean, those things that we don't expect our community to actually understand. So that's the kind of thing I'm recommending. In terms of overload, I think most of the work is going to be, if we follow the recipe that I'm trying to give, where the application for fund help goes in at the same time as TAS opens and they plunk down their first $5,000 TAS fee, and that the acceptance decisions of funding have to be there by the time the application period closes. So I think it's an intense period of work, more intense than the review committees have been. And perhaps that's problematic, although in this case I don't see any other way to do it. Perhaps it could start a little sooner, I'm not sure. But, and then after that, I think that committee is over until the next set of applications, unless we want to ask that committee to remain on hand to be oversight for any problems that occur. But still, it would be much less work. It would be in a very intense period of work, kind of like NOMCOM has. If you take a cross between ICANN's NOMCOM, where, they sort of work for a while getting up to speed, and then there's the week of, intensity, and the way the reviews committee, I think that's kind of my notion of how ICANN uses mechanisms that it already has and understands and adapts them to this particular application. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. Can I just ask for one small clarification? Alan asked the question, said we community participation, when you say that you actually obliged to use invested interests, and it might be good, you have them, their noses already under the tent. And I know we're talking about panel composition here, and there's a notion that we have inside people, ICANN community, and an outside expert. Avery brought it down to two different sets, says, well, you could have one such panel and then a review panel. That's what I'm hearing. Do you think it would be sufficient to address the concern that Alan raised here? That's the question I'm asking.
Only Alan can say if it's sufficient to respond to his concern. I think one of the foundations of ICANN is that we try to do the right thing by having all the vested interests in the room talking together, where our vested interests counterbalance each other, so that we have the GAC, the ALAC, the SOs, etc. in the room. All the vested interests are represented, and within the ICANN notion, that aggregation of vested interests in a transparent manner gives us as close as we're going to get to, you know, cumulative neutrality. So, but only Alan can say whether it's sufficient to respond to his. And then, as I say, we need the, and I wasn't thinking it of two panels. I was thinking, as with the accountability panel, which is the one I paid the most attention to, but I've noticed the others, you bring in some outside experts, and they are members of that panel as well, whether, you know, they're advisors or they're observers or they're voters or not. I didn't really think about, I think once you get into a group like that, it all works together. It builds its own chemistry, as we saw with the Accountability and Transparency Committee, which at least the committee part getting to its recommendations, you know, looks like an overwhelming success. We'll see how the recommendations do. But in terms of working as a balanced, neutral, open committee, it, at least to my mind, it was very successful.
Thank you, Alan. Cintra was next on the board, but she's saying here she was disconnected. So if you, while you get to her, so that we can back, have her back in voice contact. Can I ask Alan, because you're next on the board, to speak?
Yes, certainly. I've noticed Rafik has had his hand up forever. I don't know if that's an error or not.
I have not seen it. I'm so sorry.
Okay. In response to Avery, I did not have not pictured this as a volunteer process at all. ICANN uses volunteers and community representation from the various stakeholders on essentially on policy issues, whether it's policy on how to implement a technical function or policy on how to run the organization. This is an implementation issue, and ICANN does not have a long history of doing actual implementation by volunteer committees with balanced representation. We bring experts in to do the job. You know, we don't compose IANA of a bunch of volunteers. So I guess I disagree completely that this is a volunteer
okay.
process. Thank you.
Okay. If I can give one quick answer to that.
I think you're largely
right that we don't generally do implementation. I don't think it's the case that we never do. Certainly, the NOMCOM function is an implementation function. Though people like me have argued that it should be more external than it is, but that's beside the point. well, I'll just be honest. But it is. And I think if you look at some of like the other committees like the RSTEP and things like that, where they're, you know, are they volunteer? Are they outside professionals? They're kind of both-ish. And I guess that's the way I'm looking at this. But you're right. Perhaps an outside panel that was fully up to speed would be as reasonable a way to do it, you know.
I think we need people who are used to seeing through the ruses and making judgment calls and have a track record of success or failure.
I don't think anybody can see through ICANN ruses like an ICANN person.
No, you're not going to see through them all, but, you know, okay, I've said enough. I'll just speak. Alan.
Thank you, Alan. I really wanted to hear that. Rafik, you're on the board, sir. I'm so sorry I missed you in the first go-round.
Okay, thank you. Maybe my comments are overlapping with what Anna and Alfred discussed, but my question is, maybe we want a few panels with experts outside ICANN community, but in regarding time, is it really possible to implement that? I think we have just maybe 5 months before the beginning of in the launch of the new GSD program and the beginning of application. So we still have time to make this review panel with people outside ICANN and to bring them. So maybe it's more easy to have a review panel with people from ICANN community because it's more easy than because bringing experts maybe take more time than me.
Thank you, Rafiq. I understand what Rafiq was saying, and this is one question that goes to about the in terms of reference. Maybe that will help. What we're hearing here is two things. There's about the panel composition, and we'll have very rich discussion on that. But there's also a need for a tightening the terms of reference. Something Eric Bruno-Williams said earlier in the process might be part of the consideration for the terms of reference. But I will hope Eric is going to say something about that. But Cintra, you're on the board, and you have the floor. And Tijani, you're next.
Thank you, Carlton. I want to raise two issues with regard to the second paragraph. You talk about the applicant presenting necessary documentation. Who defines what that documentation is? Is it the SOP, or is it us defining, or is it ICANN? That's the first question. Secondly, with regard to this process, you say the SOP will be responsible for reviewing applications before the end of the application period. Are we building in appeal procedure in the event that, you know, maybe an applicant wants to raise a query with regard to the SOP decision? I mean, a lot of these applications are quite sensitive. So I don't know if that is something we want to consider in terms of timeline.
Right. Okay. Should I give answers?
Yes, please, Avery. Just answer the question. No.
Okay. Right.
Tijani, Alan, okay. Please just bear with me while Avery answers.
Okay. And the first one, I think that we have given a set of content, a set of information generally that it is useful, and I think the staff in writing up the implementation would be the one that got specific about what kind of documentation would be needed. So I think it's like most things in this. This group would give a general definition of, you know, whatever's needed, and I'm not absolutely sure I know what that is. I assume other people in this group are better than that at me, but I filled out applications, and it's normal application stuff. And then the staff is the one that would come up with, well, it means this document, this document, and then we go back and forth between this group and that on that. On the other, I didn't build in an appeal time, and I think that as with some of the other review processes this time around, if we get this much going and trust to the panel and we're giving people their 5,000 back if they don't succeed, I think that, you know, that's the best we can do. I don't know that the timetable works for an appeal, although I generally think that you have to have an appeal mechanism in, but I'm just not mm-hmm. sure, given the time, we could build one in at this point.
Thank you, Avery. For the record, Carla from staff has actually put some information in the Adobe chat area. She said essentially that this is a joint effort from the working group here and staff to identify documents and information needed. She also made a pertinent addition to that, in my opinion, which she says this should be in the instruction manual, and that is the instruction manual that we are proposing to have for this process. Thank you, Carla, there. Tijani and Alan, you are both on the board. Tijani, you are first up, sir. You have the floor.
Thank you. I think that a panel with community volunteers combined with the experts as advisors will work very good. It will be a combination between the community and the external experts. So it is our hope from the beginning. I don't know if you remember, but from the beginning we said we need the community to be in to assess and to evaluate the applications. So I think we have to continue in the same way and to try to have the community volunteers on the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Tajani. Alan, your hand is up. You have the floor, sir.
Yeah, it's Alan Greenberg. Just in response to what documents, in the thing I prepared, I think we need to go to outside people who are used to evaluating financial need and ask them what documents. We went through a number of iterations in a number of months ago about what kind of metrics are we going to use, and every time we came up with one, we came up with a counterexample why it was a bad one and not applicable. And I don't think we have the skills and experience to do that. So I think ICANN needs to involve some outside people quickly in determining exactly what is it we're going to assess to determine financial need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Tajani, your hand is still up. Is it a question?
No.
That you...
Sorry, it was a...
Okay. Eric, I don't know if you're on board. You've made a... can I ask you to... You may mention a risk of community involvement, and you also had a notation, and I'm looking for it, about the in terms of the terms of reference, that there is an economic question to that might be included in that. Do you think it'd be useful for you to expound a little bit more on that for the group? Because I think the idea has something to do with the terms of reference, which is a lot of the talk for this group, for the panel. Eric, are you hearing me? No, Eric might be gone, but there was an interesting notation in the chat that I thought is had some impact on the terms of reference for the panel, but Eric apparently is not available. Avery, I know you have to go, so can I ask the questions? Do you believe that you have all exhausted all the comments to do with the panel composition and the terms of reference for the panel that will be required to evaluate so that there's as an anti-gaming initiative? Tajani, you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
You have the board.
Before Avery leaves, I'd like to say that perhaps we need to start now figuring out the skeleton of the document, the final document. We need to put it now and to try to fill it in by the new texts, so that we, in the future calls, because the time is very tight now, we will go through the text and we will approve. We will try to find the consensus on each part of the text. So perhaps we need now to make the structure of the text and to begin to feed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tajani. I totally agree. Can I ask Eric to speak now? Because, as I said, he raised quite an intriguing comment to my mind in the chat, and it has to do, in the first place, with the terms of reference for the panel, and he was zeroing on an economic issue, which I think is quite interesting. Eric, can you hear me now? Can you go on?
Testing.
Yes, we are hearing you, Eric.
Good. Eric Brenner Williams for the transcript. In the chat, I pointed out that if we are looking at this from a motivation point of view of the gamer, the utility of their action is to acquire an asset. And if the asset, if the cost to the gamer upon detection is loss of the asset and the gain that the asset provided them, that should address the utility function that motivates gamers. What else would is necessary for clarification? Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Is it just me who sees that there is an issue there for that might be have to be included in terms of reference?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood if that was a question.
Yes, that was my question to the panel, Eric. I didn't see anyone respond to you, but I thought it was an interesting thing. You have to find a way to penalize gaming, even as you make it so that it is not onerous or doesn't frighten away real live people who need help. Cheryl, you have the floor. Your hand is up.
Thank you, Carlton. Cheryl Langdon for the transcript record. I would put my personal response to your question, Carlton, in the same camp as I would how we've discussed issues of deliberate or otherwise omissions, errors in change in status. If you no longer qualify, and that would include because you falsified or gamed, you pay back and there may be penalty and
okay.
other consequences.
Thank you, Cheryl. I just wanted to have that a part of the term because, remember, we are going to create an instruction manual here. I believe that something like that has to be placed in the record. Eric, you have your hand up.
Thank you. The cost for misrepresentation under the guidebook for unqualified applicants, so these would be applicants who meet the DAG's definition of unqualified, which for shorthand I'll say owned by the Mafia or Al-Qaeda, whatever the boogeyman of the moment is. The penalty for that is the application is blocked, and I don't think that refunds are made to the applicant. So the cost imposed by the KPMG staff development of this particular item is not merely the refund of benefit, but actually it's the total loss to
the
applicant engaged in constructive fraud or direct fraud. So, thank you.
Thank you, Eric. We have had a good discussion on the panel especially, and terms of reference and, of course, the composition. I think we have some things we can work on there. But we have to move on to the next topic, unfortunately. This is the in-kind services. Elaine is the lead here. Is Elaine on?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you, Elaine. You have the floor. Thank you.
Okay. Carlton, there have been no changes or updates since last week. We did see some emails coming through from different registry service providers identifying open source solutions that would be available possibly to our needy applicants that could be added to the list. But that's the only thing that I've seen different than last week. And I'm about to enter a no coverage zone, and I'm not on Adobe, so perhaps you could take over the conversation in a couple minutes when I drop off.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Elaine? Somebody's hand is up. By the way, we've been working with Carla to draft a document that from
their perspective and overview of all of the transcripts and all of the recordings, what they think are open questions. And this is very helpful. As a matter of fact, in some of them we've discussed so far, especially panel selection and gaming, they were actually identified as items they feel were still not, they're not sure from listening to the records, were completely taken care of. And in this case, they've asked a question here that they think is still not fully explored. And the question is, are all of the services pro bono? Do we contemplate that all of these services are pro bono services? And this is in the definition of what is in-kind services.
Carlton, it's Elaine. Can I answer?
Yes, yes, please go ahead, Elaine.
I would suggest that we not force it to be pro bono, which I think means free. I think we should allow providers to offer reduced pricing because you'll have more participants that way. Thanks.
Thank you, Elaine. Is there any concerns about the answer Elaine gave for that question? And thank you, Carla. And Cheryl, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Thank you. Cheryl Lingdenor, for the record, I don't have a concern about Elaine's response. I just have a slightly different take on what pro bono perhaps means, and that is that certainly the pro bono services organisations I'm involved with either receive or give, the services are costed. They are simply not charged, but the cost is indeed recognised. It still costs. It's at a no-charge service, or occasionally it is at a level of charge where, for example, billable hours will be marked up and reduced to a zero charge, but other aspects of the service provision are charged at cost as opposed to cost plus profit. So we would probably need to define what is meant by the JAS work group if we use terms like pro bono. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. This is very important. This is my understanding of what pro bono means as well, and it's very important for us to have a common understanding of it. I believe so. So I quite agree with you. I think that is something that needs to be defined within the context of in-kind services because it means something. There are implications down line for depending on where you are in the world in delivering what we call pro bono services. Are there any other comments, concerns? We see no other hand up for this question. Nothing else for Elaine? The other open question that the staff caught up is we channel access program. This has to do with the absence of ICANN accredited registrars in the region for sustainability of qualified applications. And the question that was raised here was, do we need to say anything more specific about that in the report to answer that question?
Carlton, this is Carla speaking.
Yes, Carla. Cheryl has her hand. Cheryl, right, you can go right after Carla. Carla, you go ahead, please.
Yeah, the reason this is there is because there was a discussion in Singapore, so there was some notes from there, and there was a discussion with the group here about, you know, those services being something that
this group would look into it. So what we want is just to confirm that this is a closed issue, or is this still an open issue?
Yes. Yes, thank you, Carla. You're quite right. That if I said otherwise, that's what the question was asked with the intent. Cheryl, you have the floor.
Thank you, Captain. Cheryl Langdon for the transcript record. I don't think we can close this issue off. I think something needs to be said. It's what needs to be said that still needs to be, to some extent, discussed. This comes back to one of the points I made in an earlier call with what I can and cannot do. And what I cannot do is, in my totally biased view, make some sort of instruction to industry as to what it might provide where to any form of applicant, needy or otherwise. The best we can, I think, do is strongly encourage that facilitation and undying gratitude, if that's what it takes, somehow is bestowed on industry players who do offer such services, but I'm certainly unaware of anything that could, in inverted commas, make it happen, other than coming from industry players themselves. When that stepping forward or self-identification or offer happens, then yes, there's absolutely a role, and the JAS report should outline that there would be a role of ensuring a chain of trust and an appropriate matchmaking service be facilitated. But there's an awful lot of stuff, and stuff should be underlined in inverted commas and boldface, that needs to happen in the industry camp for the magic in that black box to actually work. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Alan, you have your hand up, so you have the floor.
Yeah, I think Cheryl got it pretty well right. I'll add a comment that we don't make in our report. I think ICANN, in terms of people within ICANN, have a strong role to play in making sure this happens or trying to ensure that it happens. But this is completely, off the record and on a person-to-person basis. I'm a little bit disappointed that a month or so plus after the first discussion of the $2 million, that there are no matching funds that have been announced yet. But, I think we're going to have, ICANN is going to have to do a lot of consciousness raising to get some of that money and in-kind services donated. But I don't think it's going to be an official, ICANN requires that you do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So I also think that Cheryl kind of captured what needs to be said there, and maybe for the record, we can from the transcript see if we could get some of the language placed in the appropriate spot so that it helps us to fill that out. It would be very useful indeed. Are there any other comments for Elaine? Sintra, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
On mute.
Thank you, Colton. Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. I have a bit of a problem with us saying let the buyer beware when we are also intimating that we will give a certain amount of legal advice in terms of the general documentation and that kind of thing. I think we should also advise applicants on what they should look for from a provider. Not to say specifically give them advice on whatever arrangement is made, but just a checklist of things so that they know what they should expect. Thank you.
Okay, and I see Cheryl is agreeing with this this approach suggested by Sintra. we have to capture specific language to ensure that this happens. And so probably if we can add to Elaine's draft in the candidate text area or comment, that will help. It would also be, we could also add the definition for pro bono there as well, and that would certainly fill out the document and make it a lot tighter. So thank you, Cheryl and Sindra, for that. I'm sure Elaine appreciates the help. Any other comment? Okay, there be none in this area. Can we move to the final little item? And this concerns the last time we had a discussion on financial criteria and how to set them up, and we thought that there would be some specific language that would capture some concerns. And we believe that Alan made some comments that were germane to this this objective. Alan has put together some comments and some text for this qualification. This is the criteria area now, so we are back to criteria and filling out a little item there. Alan, can I ask you to just lead through this this text and see if we all agree with you? Alan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Just let me pull it up. I wasn't expecting to do that today. I thought we were running out of time. Just let me pull up the document. Oh, I can find it. Okay, I realized as I was starting to do the work, and I didn't get a chance to do it till late yesterday, that the existing document has a lot of the criteria or the constraints in it. They need rewording, but I think a lot of them are there already. So although I started trying to put them in from scratch, I realized as I went along that there was no point, given the late time I was doing this, to try to integrate it all. So I think there needs to be some work done, and I'm willing to try to do it in the next, hopefully before Friday, to pull together what I put with what is in the original wiki page that I was working on, which I assume is basically the same as was in the milestone report, because we did do a lot of work on those kinds of constraints. I think it's a multi-step process that we're in right now. I think we're in a good position to identify what the overall constraints are. I don't think we're in a good position to specify the criteria in a way that they can be submitted and addressed by the applicant in their application. I think ICANN needs to go to outside experts who have a track record of doing this kind of thing. But guided by our overall constraints and the perimeters that we want to put around it, and I think it's doable. This is one of those instances, however, when I think we need feedback from ICANN staff as I'm doing this or as we're doing this to say is what is being proposed something that they believe is viable and they can find experts who know how to do this. I did identify that the main people in the world who do this kind of thing are international funding organizations and bilateral donors. By bilateral donors, I'm talking about the, you know, development cooperation units or groups within national governments. And there are people there who do this on a regular basis. And I think those are the resources that ICANN needs to draw upon. And perhaps, you know, there are a number of GAC members who can act as go-betweens to identify the right people in their governments who might be able to provide us with some words and the details on how to go about this in the future. I don't think we have enough time to go through it piece by piece right now, but I think that's the substance.
Yes. Thank you, Alan. Yeah. So can I just summarize? Alan's put the text there. As Alan noted, the criteria and all of those constraints may have been in the MR2 report, but he feels that we might do a better job of collating them and restructuring them, and he's volunteered to do just that. Thank you, Alan. Tijani, you have your hand up, sir. You have the board.
Okay, so thank you, Alan, for your feedback. It's very interesting, and I think that it was what I meant by raising the point last time. Exactly as you said, the combination between the objective criteria and the specific inquiry for each applicant is necessary, are necessary both. Because we can avoid gaming from one side, and we can avoid also complaisance for the other side. You had an interrogation saying whether we have to prioritize avoiding gaming or missing really deserving applicants. I think that the main objective for this group is that the support goes only to the needy applicants. Even if the filter will drop some other needy applicants or more or less needy applicants, it's less dangerous for me than giving the support to people who are not needy or who don't deserve this money, this help, this assistance. You said that we are not able to define criteria, and I agree with you, we are not specialists. But we have the duty to do so. So if we are not able to do so, we have to ask for help and to get those criteria to put them in our report. It is our duty to find who can help us. If it is ICANN, we have to go to ICANN and tell them, please help us. If it is not ICANN, if it is outside ICANN, we have to try to find them. It is our duty, it is in our charter, we have to put them. And if we don't have other criteria or metrics than that we defined before, so we will keep what we had and try to find better. I think that you asked another question about manageable process. I think that the process must be manageable, and any complex process will lead to unexpected or unpredictable results. So, preferably, I will vote for a manageable process, even if it will make some people losing or not having the support. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Eric, you have your hand up. You're next, and then followed by Alan. And we have 3 minutes until the top of the hour, so please be concise. Thank you. Eric, you're up, sir.
I don't appear to be audible.
You're okay now.
You're now. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question for Tijani. Tijani, this is Eric Brenner-Williams. You've pointed out the difference of two models. One is has a cost to some applicants who are needs qualified, and the other possibility is the cost of having non-qualified applicants receive benefits. And you've indicated that you prefer the former rather than the latter as a sort of a risk model for dealing with screening applicants for their qualifications. The question I have for you is, does this division into two possible risk models, does this survive if we have a post-award recovery of assets to remove the utility of gaming from gamers? And if I've stated my question poorly, let me know.
Thank you, Eric. Tijani, could you answer quickly? All Eric, as I understand, is asking is that if you follow your model, would you be satisfied if you had some kind of criteria that says, well, if we catch you, you have to pay back?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, that's a short, swift answer. Alan, you have your hand up, sir. You're next.
Yeah, in response to Jenny, I agree on both counts with his answers. My personal opinion is better to have, not serve as many people than to allow gaming, and the same with the complexity issue. The reason I raised it is there are probably models of certain types of applicants, maybe national governments are those, where it's going to be exceedingly difficult to really recognize need. And keeping things simple may mean we exclude them. I don't want to focus on that particular one, but it's an example. With regard to Eric, I heard a slightly different question than what you rephrased. I heard, if we go for a model where people have to repay, does that lessen the worry about gaming? And my answer to that is yes, certainly. Assuming there are sufficient penalties on not repaying, that there's some teeth in the process. I haven't heard though that we are definitively going for that, and that ICANN will accept that, which makes the process more difficult at this point. I think we have to assume that it is not going to be repaid, and if it is, then the actual criteria used in the judging becomes more flexible. There's still only a finite amount of money in the first round, regardless of whether it gets repaid at some later date, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. We're going to take the last intervention from Cintra here. Some of us have another call that's right on us. So, Cintra, you have the floor. Please keep it short.
Thank you, Carlton. The first criteria, you say financial need is the key, right? I agree with that, but I don't want it to be restricted as the only financial need. Even if an applicant has, say, a percentage of the money for the application or has the full amount for the application, but lacks technical capacity, shouldn't we be able to cater for that? That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Cintra. This certainly has raised a few issues for us. Can I suggest that we take Alan up on his offer to reformat this area of criteria from the MR2 report and make as additions as he see practical, especially with the items that came out of this discussion, and that would be helpful to us. We are at the top of the hour, just past the hour. We also have another call pending. I really want to thank all of you for participating, and I'm calling this discussion to an end. Thank you all. See you on Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
That are you monitoring